Welcome to the Hillside Church Sermon Podcast. We're thrilled to have you join our community. Each week, Pastor Brad, our pastoral team, or our guest speakers bring the Bible's timeless truths to life, offering messages that are not just inspiring, but deeply relevant to your daily journey. Whether you're joining us in Airdrie or tuning in from anywhere around the world, we hope these sermons encourage you, strengthen your faith, and help you feel more connected to Jesus and to us. Thanks for being part of our Hillside family. Let's grow together in faith and love. As family, we go.
And over the last few weeks, if you've been with us on Sunday mornings, over the last few weeks, we've been looking at the stories from what we're referring to as the bad guys. From the story of the crucifixion of Jesus. We've looked at what we can learn from Judas. We've looked at what we can learn from Caiaphas, who was the high priest at the time, the guy who brought all the charges against Jesus. And we've looked at what we can learn from Pilate, Pontius Pilate, the Roman governor who sentenced Jesus to death. And as we've walked through the story of the crucifixion of Jesus, we've done it by focusing on the characters in the story, the people in the story that we would often look at and see as the bad guys in the story and what we can learn from them. And today I want to pick up on that theme a little bit. I want to continue a little bit on that theme. Look at someone who at this point in the story, as we look at this point of the story, could be considered a bad guy. Could be considered someone that we would look as a warning. Someone that we would maybe say, don't be like this. But yet, it's someone whose story could also, as we journey through our time together this morning, it is going to bring us to a place of unimaginable hope. For you and for me, and in the context of this story, it's going to bring us and fill us and hopefully fill you and fill me with so much hope as we look at this story of someone who could be a bad guy filling us with hope. Our story is actually told in two different chapters in the Bible. The first one in John chapter 18, the second one in John chapter 21. One before the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ, and one after the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. Our first story takes place after Jesus was arrested, and he's working his way through this sort of sham of a system that he's going through. If you've been with us or if you haven't been with us, Jesus is arrested, and he's brought up on all of these fake charges. And they try to pin all of these charges, and they lie about what he said, and they lie about what he's done. But they eventually get to a place where they can make this choice to condemn him. And then they're brought before the Roman governor, who recognizes and understands that Jesus is innocent. But in an effort to hold on to his power, in an effort to hold on to his influence, he sentences a man he knows to be innocent, a man he knows to have done nothing wrong, sentences him to death anyway. And our story for today starts as all of this is taking place. It's the middle of the night, and Jesus is being shuttled from place to place, surrounded by armed guards and surrounded by soldiers, and he's being shuffled here and shuffled there to wait and then go appear before this person and go appear before that person. And while Jesus is getting shuffled around, and it's late at night and it's cold, and there's some people gathered around a fire to keep warm. And in John chapter 18, we discover that one of the people gathered around this fire is a man named Peter. And Peter, if you don't know, is one of Jesus' disciples. He's one of Jesus' core followers. In fact, he's one of the most prominent disciples. So when Jesus has big moments in his life, Peter is there along with him. Peter is a significant part of this story. And we discover that around this fire, as Jesus is being shuffled from place to place, as Jesus is being brought here and brought there on his march to death, Peter is sitting around this fire. Peter is watching what's happening with Jesus, and he's watching from a distance. He's trying to make sense of everything. Trying to understand, trying to figure out what happened. See, it was just a handful of hours before this. When Jesus and his disciples, they were gathered together and they were sharing a meal together. And at this meal, Peter stands up in front of everyone and he makes this declaration where he will stand up and he will say, "Whatever happens, Jesus, I will never turn my back on you. I will never betray. I will ride with you till the end. If it means I have to die, Jesus, I will do that." He makes this declaration in front of everyone. And then it's just a couple hours after that, in the wee hours of the morning, Jesus and his disciples, they go from this dinner that they're sharing together, and they go to a garden, and they pray together. And while they're praying, this regiment of soldiers and officials come to arrest Jesus. And it's in this moment where Peter does what he said he was going to do. Peter stands up for Jesus. As they come to arrest Jesus, as they come to take him away, Peter, who's made this commitment to say, "Even if I have to die for you, I'll die for you." And as they come to arrest Jesus, Peter takes out his sword. And he's ready to fight to save his friend, who he believes to be the Messiah. And he takes a swing at someone, knowing that this is probably going to lead to his death. He's committed a capital crime. He could be killed for this. And he's ready to fight. He's ready to give himself for Jesus. But then some things happen that Peter doesn't expect. He's ready to give his all, ready to die for Jesus. But then Jesus does some things that Peter has to fight to reconcile. See, Jesus heals the man who Peter tried to kill. Peter's standing up for his friend, and he's ready to go. He's ready to fight. "Jesus, they're not going to take you." And Jesus, instead of letting the fight commence, heals the man. And then Jesus, instead of being willing to fight, lets himself get arrested. He doesn't fight. He doesn't struggle. He doesn't try to set himself free. And Peter is now left. He's given the last 3 years of his life to this man. He's followed him. He gave up his career. He gave up his life. He even had to give up time with his family. But we know that Peter was married, and yet he gives 3 years to following this guy here and there and everywhere. They're homeless. They're walking from place to place. It's been a rough 3 years. And Peter's given his 3 years to this man. And he's ready to fight and die for it. And yet, the man he's given his life to just gives up. Just gives up. In. Peter was not going to give up this part of his life without a fight. He had committed too much. He had been in too deep. He had been going for too long, and he wasn't going to give it up without a fight. But then he watches Jesus do exactly that. Give up without a fight. And so Peter, his head swirling, his emotions are here, there, and everywhere, and he's trying to follow his friend. He's trying to follow Jesus and see what's going to happen. And he's watching from a distance as everything he knew and everything he understood about the world, everything he thought was true, is falling apart piece by piece by piece, moment by moment by moment. He can see Jesus being escorted by armed men being brought to trial. And Peter knows how this ends. He knows this isn't a fair trial. He knows this isn't legitimate. He knows how the Roman system works. Once Jesus is in the system, Jesus is going to die. And so he watches his friend going place by place. And Peter follows Jesus, what's going on, trying to understand, hoping that maybe Jesus is going to do something. You know, Peter has seen Jesus do some really remarkable things. And so maybe there's a miracle on the horizon. Maybe Jesus is going to do something to set himself free. But he's going from place to place, and there's no miracle. Nothing is happening. Jesus, or Peter, he's trying to keep the last 3 years from being a waste. Trying to keep the last 3 years, trying to help himself from realizing that maybe, just maybe, he's given the last 3 years to a fraud. Jesus was supposed to be someone special. I've given my life for him. I've sacrificed so much for him. And now it looks like he's just a regular guy. What have I done? What have I wasted my life on? And as he sits around this fire trying to think, trying to figure this out, trying to keep everything from imploding in his heart and his soul, someone around the fire says something to Peter that he can't reconcile. We're told it's a servant girl, probably 12, 13 years old, sees Peter from across the fire. She can recognize his accent and says, "You're with him, aren't you? You're one of his followers." And Peter is fighting to figure this out. A couple of hours ago, Peter knew the answer to that question. A couple of hours ago, Peter knew the answer to that question. Yes, he's with him, and he's willing to die for him. There was nothing that could have prevented Peter from saying, "Yes, I'm with Jesus. Yes, I'm a follower of his. Yes, I am all in." A couple of hours ago, Peter was willing to die for him. But now, Peter is unsure of what does it mean to be with Jesus anymore. What does it mean to be a follower of Jesus anymore? Three times he's asked, you're with him, aren't you? And even though Peter said he never would, three times Peter denies knowing Jesus. Three times Peter says, I don't know him. I don't know him. I don't know him. And the third time, he even swears, calling down a curse on himself. Saying sort of like, I swear I'm telling you the truth on the grave of my children. May my children die if I'm not telling the truth. I don't know him. And I think in Peter's broken state, there may even have been a little bit of truth to this. See, Peter thought he knew Jesus. He thought he knew what this was all about. He thought he knew who he was following. He thought he knew what the end goal was. That at the end of this, I know what we're doing. And over the last couple of hours, he's lost it all. And are you with Jesus? I don't even know anymore. I thought I knew who Jesus was, but I don't know him. I thought I knew him. I thought I knew what it meant to be a follower of his. I don't know him. I don't know what any of this means anymore. And it's at this moment when Peter denies Jesus for the third time. And in Luke chapter 2, verse 61, it tells us that as Peter was speaking these words, the third time, Jesus, from wherever he was, turns and looks at Peter. We don't know exactly the logistics of how this all worked, if he was through a window, on a ledge, just in a courtyard a little further away, but it's at this moment, when Peter swears, "I don't know him," that Jesus turns from where he is, and him and Peter lock eyes. They lock eyes with each other across this fire. Peter knows what he's done. He knows he's denied Jesus. And somehow Jesus, even though he can't see Peter, or can't hear Peter, knows what Peter's done too. And Peter knows that Jesus knows. that Peter, in his confusion and in his lost state, denies Jesus. And he knows what he's done. And then he looks and he sees his friend, and his friend that he's just denied turns and looks at him, and Peter knows in his heart and in his soul, Jesus knows what I just did. And we're told that Peter left there and he wept. And this is the last moment that Jesus and Peter share. Before Jesus is crucified. This, as Peter could understand it, was his last interaction with Jesus. This was the last experience that he was going to have with Jesus, was them locking eyes across this fire, and Peter knowing in his heart and in his soul, somehow Jesus knew what I did. And Jesus dies. And Peter's whole world collapses in on itself. But my friends, we're gathered on Easter Sunday. We're gathered here today because we know the story doesn't end with Jesus' death. Amen? That's a good point to be like, yeah, right, you're right, Pastor. That's why we're here today. That's why we have the word risen on. This matters. And so Peter believed his relationship with Jesus was over, but we're gathered on Easter Sunday. But maybe for you, in your life and in your story today, right now, you can see some of yourself in this point in the story of Peter. Maybe it feels at times like your life is unraveling, that things are coming apart at the seams, that you're trying to hold it together, you're trying to make sense of everything that's going on in your life and in your journey and in your family and in your marriage and with your kids and job and all of the things that go on in life, and it feels like you're fighting hard to keep it together, to keep it from falling apart, maybe to keep it from imploding. Maybe you look back on the last 6 months, the last year, the last decade, and you see so much of what you've given your life for, what you've spent pursuing, what you've been trying to achieve in life, and what you thought it was, and what you thought it was going to be, and maybe it hasn't worked out like you hoped. Maybe you look back and you say, 10 years ago I had this beautiful plan to be where I'd be in 10 years, and now when I look at my life, I'm nowhere where I thought I would be. Maybe it's completely blown up in your face. Maybe today you're trying to pick up the pieces of a shattered life. Maybe you've come to a place where you're like, it's gone. It's not falling apart. It's destroyed. And that's why I ended up in church today, because I didn't know where else to go. I didn't know what else to do. But I heard that something with these kinds of places is supposed to help in a moment like this. That maybe things have fallen apart. Maybe even like Peter, you found yourself disillusioned with God. You found yourself disillusioned with Jesus. I thought these things were true. I was told these things were true. I was promised that if I followed Jesus, my life would look a certain way. I was promised that if I gave myself to this, if I did the right things, if I said the right things, if I went to church on Sunday, and if I volunteered, and if I gave money, and if I did this, and I did that, and I did this, and I did that, then life is going to look a certain way. And I'm told that God is good all the time. And all the time, God is good. And people tell me that, and they make me these promises. And we sing songs about how he's a good, good father. And we are told this. But yet, if he's such a good, good father, why does my life look like this? If he's such a good good father who's got good plans for me, if he's such a good, good father who loves me and cares for me, if he's such a good God, then why is my life like this? I've given my life to him, and I feel like I've wasted it. Maybe today, like Peter, you feel disillusioned with God. But this, my friends, is why Easter morning is so important. Because Peter thought he had lost it all. He'd given his life to a fraud. He had given his life to just another bag of promises that meant nothing. Until Sunday morning, Mary and some women come running back to where Peter is. And they say, "We just were at Jesus' tomb, and you're not going to believe what happened." And they share the story with them, and we're told in the book of John that Peter and John run to the tomb to go see what happened. And in fact, in the book of John, we're told that John won the race. But they go and they discover Jesus' tomb is empty. I don't know what Peter would have felt in that moment. The sort of mix of emotions that he would have. The stunning realization that it's not all been a waste. The stunning realization that maybe this Jesus was someone special. Maybe this Jesus was something more significant. But also the guilt and the weight of the last time we were together. We locked eyes across the fire, and Jesus knows I turned my back on him. I don't know for Peter what it must have felt like. But we do know what Peter should do in this moment. Peter should go find Jesus, and Peter should go make it right. That's what we tell our kids when they do something wrong and they hurt their brother or their sister. We say, you need to go apologize. You need to go find them. You need to go make it right. You need to go make the wrongs you've done right. And what should Peter do? He should go find Jesus. Go get down on his hands and knees. Jesus, I'm so sorry. Will you forgive? Jesus, I'm so sorry. Will you forgive me? Peter needs to go and make it right. But it's not until about a week later, in John chapter 21, that we find the conclusion to our story. And it's here that I want to focus our last few moments together. The story starts at daybreak. It's very early in the morning, sunrise, essentially. And Peter and some of the other disciples, in the face of all that they don't know, they go back to the one thing they do understand. This whole thing has been an insane ride, and they don't know what to do. Let me go back to the one thing I know to do. They go back to fishing on the Sea of Galilee. See, that's where Peter and his brother Andrew and his friend James and his friend John, it's what many of the disciples did before they followed Jesus. And the sun's rising up over the water. And Peter and his friends, they've had a miserable night fishing. An absolutely miserable night. They've been out all night trying to catch fish. They've caught nothing. It's been an awful night. They're trying to go back to what they know, and even what they don't know doesn't work. And as the sun is rising over the water, and Peter and his friends are wrestling with everything that's going on, they hear a voice from the shore. And the voice calls out to them and offers them some unsolicited help. You know, the kind of help that everyone loves to get when they're frustrated. When you've been trying to do something and somebody comes along and says, "Hey, you know what you should do?" and it's like the least helpful thing in the world. They're deciding to pack it in, and a voice comes from the shore. It says, "Hey! Try casting your net on the other side." That's about the least help. I don't fish, but I would imagine if you're a fisherman, that's probably the least helpful thing. Like, the side of the boat matters, the fish are swimming. But this voice calls from the shore and says, "Hey, cast your net on the other side." And in a moment, Peter, everyone else in that boat, are brought back to a moment. See, 3 years before this, Peter and his brother Andrew and his friends, they were fishing on a boat. They had a miserable night catching fish. They didn't catch anything. When a voice called from the shore and said, "Hey, try casting your net on the other side." And they did. And the Bible will tell us that they caught so many fish that their boat was almost sinking. And when they get to shore, and they come to this person who said that, "Who are you?" And the man says to him, "I'm going to make you the most successful fisherman in the world. But you're not going to go fishing for fish. You're going to go fishing for men." This is how Peter and James and John and Andrew, this is how they're first introduced to Jesus. And as they're sitting out in the boat and this voice calls to them, "Put your net on the other side," and they put their net on the other side, and John records that they catch 153 fish. Seems like a lot. But if there's one thing we know about fishermen, they're always truthful about how many and how big. But they catch 153 fish. And Peter, in this moment, is overwhelmed by everything he's experiencing. And the Bible tells us he jumps out of the side of the boat and decides to swim to shore. He knows it's Jesus. And Jesus, he knows in his heart and in his soul, Jesus is offering him a chance to start over. Jesus has rewound the tape back to the very... This is how they first met. Jesus is extending an olive branch and saying, "Let's go back to the beginning." And we read that Peter dives in and he swims as fast as he can to the shore. But when he gets to the shore, Jesus is there to share another moment with him. See, as Peter gets to the shore, Jesus has lit a fire. And so when Peter comes and sits down with Jesus, he locks eyes with Jesus across a fire again. And they go from their first moment together to their last moment together. And Jesus and Peter sit apart or across the fire from one another. See, Jesus doesn't demand that Peter come to him. Jesus doesn't demand that Peter make things right. But instead, Jesus comes and finds Peter. He rewinds the tape for him. Remember where it started. Remember where we were. And Jesus sits down with Peter. And it's this beautiful moment of reconciliation. But then there's the moment of this fire. And all the smells, all the sights of that moment of Peter's failure come rushing back. And in the face of Peter's failures and denials, Jesus spends this moment with him. Jesus looks Peter in the eye and asks him three times, "Peter, do you love me?" Now, there's different words for love that are used here, and there's some wordplay in the original languages here, but three times Peter will say, "Peter, do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me?" Each time, the question hurting immensely. But each time, the question bringing deep healing. And we see Jesus doing the opposite of maybe what we would expect. He comes and finds Peter, and he makes things right with Peter. Jesus doesn't stand back at a distance and say, "Here I am, Peter, you need to come and find me. You need to come and grovel to me. You need to come and find me, and we'll try and fix this." But Jesus finds Peter. He meets Peter literally where he was at, in the middle of a lake. But also, he meets him spiritually and emotionally where he was living from. This moment that has scarred Peter's soul, Jesus sets out to bring healing to it. And he extends to him grace upon grace upon grace. He comes and he finds Peter and he makes things right. And three times, as Jesus says, "Peter, do you love me?" Peter responds with, "Jesus, you know I love you." "Peter, do you love me?" "Jesus, you know I love you." "Peter, do you love me?" "Jesus, you know I love you." And today, as we sit here, I want to remind you that Jesus has the same grace for you. That Jesus isn't looking for you to find, or Jesus isn't looking for you to go find him. But the Bible will say to us about Jesus, it says that, "Behold, I stand at the door of your heart and I'm knocking." That Jesus isn't looking for you to look for him. Jesus is looking for you today. In the face of all that's maybe gone wrong in your life, in the face of everything that you're dealing with, walking through right now, and in the face of maybe all that's seemingly gone wrong in your relationship with Jesus, he invites you to just simply come, sit down around the fire, and let him do the work. Let him restore you. To come and let him heal you. To come and let him make things right.
Thank you for listening to this message from Hillside Church. We're so glad to be able to share God's word with you as part of our church family. Stay connected with us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at Hillside Airdrie. Send us an email at info@hillsideairdrie.ca. You can also reach out to our pastors via our website, hillsideairdrie.ca, by selecting our church in the main menu, then our leadership from the drop-down. Our vision is to help everyone know God, know his hope, know his purpose, and know his power together. As family, we go.